Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg.
Hey everybody, this is Greg back with another tip video. Today we have John Osman. That's how you pronounce it, right?
That's right.
Osman. I like it. Let's see. So, John, you're an old schooler in the industry. You've been around the block more than once, obviously. You're a big IPv6 guy. What else? How would you characterize yourself?
Oh, a while back, I used to consider myself a network engineer, and now I just consider myself a guy that does weird things. Because people keep walking up and saying, hey, can you do this? And I've, you know, generally been able to answer, I can try, and so we get into some weird things.
You're a man that has a problem saying no. Yeah. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I get sucked into redoing exhibits over at the Natural History Museum here and things along that nature. And the guys that run the planetarium sometimes grab a hold of me and say, hey, somebody's leaving for a couple of weeks. Can you fill in and do some shows? And so I go and do whatever is appropriate at the time.
Seriously? That is amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Man of medicine. What do you call that? A Renaissance man? Is that the idea?
I throw out on, I think it was on LinkedIn, I first put technical vagabond. I have no idea what I'm supposed to be doing.
Gotcha. Well, I love that. Man, all of those things. You're talking about like industrial automation sort of stuff, I guess. You've done a little bit of that, right?
Yeah, we do a lot of work with Raspberry Pis and Arduinos and things like that. And, you know, one of the latest ones was generating faults inside computer cases. So we actually put circuits with relays in them in between the things like the Ethernet port and the video port and the power to the different peripherals inside it. And we'd actually turn them on and off remotely. There's a little MikroTik board inside to bridge things in and a battery to keep things up and running when you shut the power off to the computer.
That's killer, man. That's killer. I love it. That's very near and dear to my heart. Make it work kind of person. I dig it. So the idea, the whole premise of this tips thing is you actually gave us six, so we got a bonus tip out of you, was to share your knowledge, right? So something you've run into. So how long have you been in the game?
I started dinking with, Unix boxes, AIX boxes, actually with, IBM stuff about 89. I've been using them as a user earlier than that, 85 or so. I started programming Fortran on an AT&T 3B2.
Okay. I think I might have still been in diapers at that point. So you've got, you know, what do they say? There's a difference between knowledge and wisdom, right? So knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit, and wisdom is knowing not to put a tomato in fruit salad, right? So you've applied your knowledge over time for a while now, so you've got a lot of wisdom to impart. So I was excited when you sent me your list, and so I'm very hyped up for this one. So your number one rule, it says be the packet. What does that mean?
I mean, when you're having problems, you're trying to troubleshoot some things. I actually visualize myself as the packet running from, you know, device to device, whether it's a layer 2-1 popping through a switch or into a router where we start ripping off some of the clothes and looking a little further in and putting new clothes on for the next hop.
I love that. I am such a visual person that, having little tricks helps me out so much like that. My wife the other day was teaching my kid how to be a defender in basketball. And she said, put your defender in one pocket and the goal in the other pocket. And I was like, shit, that's awesome. I can remember, even me, I can remember that. So the idea of being the packet and stepping through, because a lot of people think, you know, when they're doing routing, I just got to get it to leave my router, and they forget, wait a minute, that packet's actually got to come back to me. Right. So
yeah,
you could
how
be
many
the
times?
Packet. All the way there and all the way back.
How many times between two routers do you have multiple switches that you have to sit there and actually think about? It's like, oh, it's getting sucked in on, you know, it's coming in on one port. There's some processing going on, and then it gets shoved back out another port. Something's doing something somewhere. You know, you got to work out what each one of those is doing. And, you know, actually, if you can ride that just like the packet does and understand each piece you're going through, then you finally really understand the networking side of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also helps you keep in mind that just because nothing's getting manipulated going from A to B doesn't mean something's not changing when it comes back from B to A, right? So things happen in both directions. It's a two-way street, right? You have to go and you have to come back. I love that.
Yep. And you start running into the asymmetries of the world out there too. You know, most people are working on networks where that doesn't matter. And when you start having return paths that are different than the egress path, you know, that's really interesting when you start trying to figure out what's going on there. And that's one where being the packet is really helpful.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I love that that's your number one as well. That's so awesome. I love the fact that you said put clothes on and take clothes off, like you're talking about encapsulating and decapsulating as you sort of move up and down stack things. Like, I love that too. That's an amazing visual. I'm gonna totally steal that one as well.
All yours. I just thought of it a few moments ago. You heard it. Right.
So you're trying to say that this is really easy for you, and I'm an amateur over here. I get it.
No, I'm not
very
saying
subtle,
that.
John.
I'm just I'm one of the people, I believe in pushing packets. I don't believe in stopping them. So I kind of poo-poo on the guys that are running the firewalls. It's like, well, if anybody can break the internet. but that's another story.
It's another story for another day. All right. So you've got your number two rule. It says PCAP or it didn't happen. I love that.
And that one came up in a conversation years ago. And the idea was, from some friends and I were sitting around, we started to realize that every time that we were trying to troubleshoot issues that were of an application nature, we actually found out that the best tool we had was TCP dump and its brethren. And we kept finding that by the time it got done, it was like, no, your application is messing things up and it's not logging it anywhere. So it doesn't matter what it says. I mean, it happens in, I think we really got it in VoIP. You know, a decade ago when I was playing with VoIP stuff, that's really where we found it, because everybody's switches and things of that nature back then didn't always play well. Hmm. So you'd run into problems like, you know, you see Mr. Hammett right now is running into issues every once in a while that he pops into on the Slack and he starts talking about, and almost invariably you end up having to get down on the wire to go read what actually happened.
Yeah, what is it actually doing? Where are these packets actually destined for? Mm-hmm. Going back to number one, you know, yep. Be the packet in those scenarios. And I can think of so many different scenarios where I've had to use packet captures to figure out a problem. I've seen before where, and it's not just, it's not always the application. Sometimes when you're troubleshooting, say, MikroTik issues, the only way you can figure out the bug that you've run into is doing a packet capture. And you can say, oh, what in the world is this thing doing? Or it's not sending any messages out. Or, you know, if you do see messages coming in, you know, and you don't see it exiting your device, well, it's like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. Or I had before, there was a content filtering device that was spuriously grabbing people's connections and dropping them. But what it would do is whenever it would block, it would send back like a TCP reset. So, you know, if you ping the web page, you know, and it takes 40 milliseconds to get there, but you see the TCP reset come back in 1 millisecond, well, obviously it's not leaving my site, right? So how else would I have been able to sort of tell that? Because it was spoofing all of the, you know, all of the packet, you know, so it was, I don't know, there's just so many various interests. One time I had a rogue DHCP server, and it was my own DHCP server acting as the rogue, my own router. And I did a packet capture. I was like, oh, yeah, that's why it's sourced from this IP. My bad. So I went in there and turned it off really quick. You know, so it's so invaluable. And it's irrefutable evidence that you can hand to somebody else, right?
Yep. Years ago, there was a Novell server that was spewing crap all over our network. I was working at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio at the time. And I'd had to teach a lot of the Novell guys how this network stuff worked. And I kept playing with my Linux box. And the Linux box at the time had a lot of Novell stuff built into the kernel. And he started talking about things that were breaking. And I got on it was PCAP or didn't happen. I'm looking at it and I'm saying, hey, this server is doing this. He says, what's that server? And I said, that's my Linux box on my desktop. Let me go shut that off. I'm sorry, I'm breaking you. But we never would have known. I mean, the tools didn't exist under the ML world to figure out what that type of stuff was going on. You had to have some type of packet capture device to figure it out.
Those are you called repaired and testing. So, yeah. Oh, my bad. I figured out what it was. We're good now. Don't worry about it. Won't happen again. Yeah, for sure. It's, and, you know, it's not just TCP dump. Like if you're a Windows guy, you got Wireshark, right? And you can take those Linux dump files that you create, and you can open it on your Windows box and Wireshark. So it's, you know, it's universal. It's whatever platform you're on, there's going to be something. And a lot of routers like your MikroTik can do the packet sniffer, or, you know, more advanced Junipers, firewalls. Your better Cisco kit can do it now. So it's in there.
That's why I like the fact that most of them are starting to run Linux on the, you know, underneath, so you can actually use some of those tools.
Yeah, it's tremendous. It's tremendous. All right. So number three, don't confuse network and physical diagrams.
Yeah, how many times has somebody handed you a map and said, here's my network? And when you start looking at it, you realize that part of the drawing is showing you how things are connected together. And another part of it is trying to show you the layer three, you know, differentiation in there. And they aren't on the same boundaries. You might have, you know, two routers and, you know, three switches between them, but that's really just two routers and a network.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, you shouldn't be trying to show somebody a picture with, if you're trying to do it the network layer, show somebody a thing that has three entities on it. Here's the routers. Here's the network they both connect to. Don't show them something with five pieces on there, because that's confusing the issue.
Yeah.
If you need something that's physical, do so.
Yeah.
Then show all of them.
And I think some people too, there's an assumption of information there. You know, they'll show, all right, here's my physical diagram, and it'll go from port X to Y on this other device, and they'll forget to tell you, oh yeah, well there's an unmanaged switch that's in there. But since it's unmanaged, yeah, I didn't even, you know, well, it's, oh, that matters.
Yeah.
You know, every physical piece. So when you're making a physical diagram, every physical piece matters. Even sometimes surge suppressors, I've seen those cause packet, yep, loss on networks, right? So if I don't know that's there, how am I supposed to adequately troubleshoot that stuff? And then also, if you haven't been to a POP in a year, or you get a new guy, how's he going to know, you know, what's supposed to be there and where's everything going? So it's, and that, again, that comes back to be the packet. We're talking about every piece of equipment in the chain, you know. Please tell me every piece.
You got to know each piece that's going through. And I think it was a Colin on the last one talked about documentation. You know, a lot. You need to document. You need to, you know, I try and make sure that whenever I document a POP or something, there's pictures, there's maps, show you where things are, there's labels on everything. You know, just carry a labeler with you. That's not in the tips, but that's a good one to have in there too.
Absolutely.
Print things out, set it on there, take pictures, leave a layer two and a layer three diagram behind so you can say, this is the way it routes. This is the way things actually flow. Because, you know, you get into, I troubleshot one last night. I found a building here in downtown Albuquerque that is sitting on a fiber ring. And as you start chasing things through there, there's, you know, six or eight VLANs running through there and seven switches inside the building. And it's like, well, okay, guys, do you even know what this is? And, you know, the last person that touched those things was there 5 years ago and has been gone for two.
Yeah, it works. Why would we touch it? Come on.
Exactly.
Yeah. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I get that. I definitely get that. But yeah, and the network diagram, I think, can be important too, you know, knowing how information is supposed to flow, you know. So, I don't know if you do this, but with customers, I'll ask them, okay, what does it look like now, right? This is what it looks like exactly now. What do you, in your mind, what's the finished product? What does it look like? You know, because usually if they're coming to a consultant, there's obviously a gap in their knowledge. So just giving me an idea of what you want it to do at the end is probably better than you trying to build me a diagram of what you think it should be, right?
Exactly. My wife yells at me for this all the time. I start talking about how to solve a problem, and she says, no, just go ask, go tell them what you're trying to get done at the end. Let them suggest some issues back. And it's just my nature of trying to solve the problems. And my wife is pretty smart, so I shut up and listen to her most of the time.
Well, you know, I've got this Tourette's that's coming out of me, of things have to be logical. They have to follow a logical flow. So if my wife is driving and she's in the parking lot. She takes a left when I was taking a right. I can't not say, why didn't you go that way? And then she'll inevitably say, do you want to drive? And I'll say, no, it just, it breaks my brain when you do something that we both know is a lie. You know what I mean? It's like, that's how long, she's like, this is the way I always go, so I don't have to think about it. And that's good, I guess. It's just my brain wants it to be the most efficient path possible. And so inefficiencies drive me bananas sometimes like that. So I get
it. And sometimes it's still efficient. You just aren't looking at it the right way.
I know, because I'm not driving, so I can just sit back and relax. So I need, that's how I need to start looking at stuff like that. It's that give me strength to endure, whatever the Serenity chant is, the things that I can't change.
And to shut up when you should.
Yeah, there you go.
That's basically, I want to change the things I can and shut up about the things I can't.
There you go. Just let them go. Just let them go. I really like your number four tip. This one's near and dear to me. You say, give back to the community.
Yeah, the community is usually what has brought most of us the most knowledge we get. How many people come back from training with any given vendor and say, oh my God, I learned everything I need to know. You learn bits and pieces here and there, and you piece them together and glom on with the things your friends have told you, that your coworkers have told you, the communities you go out and find, the conferences. I will tell anybody that's doing service or provider level type stuff, go to a NANOG. Go to at least one or two until you get to the point where it doesn't sound like gibberish. That the guys, when you're talking and they start talking policy and you say, oh yeah, you're right, we need to look at it this way, instead of saying, what does he mean by policy routing? What does he mean by, you know, it's like, oh, it's all the things that I'm looking back and saying, I want to route things based on this idea, as opposed to how do I type that into a router?
Yeah. Yeah. I went to the last NANOG that they had in Dallas, and I understood most of it, I think, but it was crazy. I heard Facebook give a presentation on how they do just inner server routing within their clusters, and that's Facebook problems. You know what I mean? There's like a handful of people in the entire world that have those kind of problems, and I couldn't even begin to imagine doing things on that kind of a scale. It was insane. I mean, I love thought experiments and hypotheticals. Could you do this? Can you do that? But that is like so far down the rabbit hole from anything that my reality will ever get close. You know what I mean? It was cool though. It was really cool.
So last spring I was on a bus with a field trip with my kid. He's in high school. We're going out to Portales, New Mexico, out in the middle of nowhere. And we're driving along and somebody looks over and asks me, what are they doing on the side of the road? And it was some guys putting fiber in the ground. And it turns out that Facebook just built a data center 20 miles south of Albuquerque. And I looked at them, I said, well, they're building fiber from, I think, Lubbock to Los Lunas, where the Facebook data center is. So part of the data center build out was, let's lay several hundred miles of dark fiber. That's a scale that I can appreciate, but I can't fully comprehend it.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. It's crazy to think you would have, you know, a data center the size of a Walmart distribution depot that's just for your servers, just your kit, just your app.
Runs. Oh, and they're building one six giant thing. Or 10 of them here.
That's insane.
They're building multiple buildings. That I think the second or third one is I think the second one's almost done. The third one's starting to go up right now. I haven't been down to the site for a while. I've got a friend that is doing some of the networking pieces there, and you know, he came running up to me at one point and says, why don't you come work with us? I was like, I don't know that I want to. I mean, I would be really interested in seeing things at that scale, but I don't want to deal with that. I want to go play with lots of little things. You heard me earlier in this. I go play with weird things and have a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
of course, I'll do whatever.
You know? That would be a pretty cool notch on your belt though, right? To say you did that sort of thing. But then, you know, I don't know. There's a little voice inside my head, you know, that needs to be seen, right? So it's like, I was listening to this podcast and they said there's people that are look at me's and there's people that are I see you's, right? And so I think everybody's got a little bit of both in them, right? And so the I look at or look at me part is – I've always tried to position myself to be like very technically inclined, and I always wanted to be the person that everybody would come to. And I sort of isolated myself on this island where I couldn't ask questions because I was too busy trying to be the guy that knew all the answers, right? So I couldn't be seen as not having all of the answers. And so I really isolated myself for a long time. So it was a really crappy mindset to be stuck in. It was a terrible island to be stranded on. And I'm so glad that I've got people like you that are willing to reach out and help and answer questions, you know, that understand so plainly what it was confusing to me, right? That I would have never came to that it's, you should give this information out, you know, you should be okay asking. And I just love the idea of, you know, feeding back into the community and helping other people how you can. And you know, you're saying little stuff. I'm of the same mindset. I love doing little things and knocking them out and, you know, kind of spreading my information around. And I guess the virus that is MikroTik, you know, you kind of, it's sort of, you plant it and it just grows over here and then over there, you know. People really tend to like that stuff. That's why I like it so much, because it's so accessible in so many scenarios.
Yeah. And, you know, you're talking about your island, you know, you get off the island, you get back into the community and you learn a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's funny how small our community really is, you know, and it's, you get to know the same names and you'll see the same names pop up in the, like the Nanog, mailing lists and stuff, you know, and on the forums and, in the Facebook groups and, you know, like in the Little Brothers with Slack. Like it just, it's funny how some of the best people are the ones that are so open to giving their information. Like for me, I always gravitated towards the quiet people because they don't need to be loud and scream about how smart they are and how important and I know everything, right? They have that quiet confidence. It seems like the louder guys are kind of, maybe if they yell loud enough, nobody will realize they don't know what they're talking about, sort of thing, right? And so people like you that are just so confident in their abilities and so willing to share their information, those are the kind of folks I always sort of gravitate towards.
Well, that was very kind words there. Talking about words, let's hit number 5.
Yeah, vocabulary.
Vocabulary.
I like it.
I think it's important. It's one of the most important things. You know, when there's no communication going on if people aren't using the same words for the same concept. And so I spend, you know, a lot of times when the first time I start working with, say, a new telco, you know, one of the, if they start rolling out a new Ethernet product, you got to sit down and start talking to them. Well, what do you call a clear LAN? What do you call, you know, a customer VLAN? How do you transport those things? Let's get our vocabulary straight so when we talk about it, we can, you know, actually get things out. And that's one of the nice things about working with the technical guys is sometimes you can cut and paste a piece of Cisco or MikroTik config and say, that's what I'm talking about. And since we both have to run that through the same parser, we know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, for sure.
And if you can find the ways to make that happen in your speech and in your writing with amongst whatever community you're working with, then you know you're starting to actually transfer knowledge and ideas back and forth.
I like that. I like that a lot. I mean, it does make sense. We've sort of worked on that a little bit in the data center too with common nomenclature. Like before somebody said, hey, we've got an outage on blah, blah, blah. So everybody freaks out, right? In a data center, you never want to hear somebody say outage, where it turns out one customer's breaker had tripped in their cabinet, right? It's like, that's not an outage. Dude, you know, so words and the words you choose to use can have significant impact, you know. So it's a common nomenclature, I think, in a lot of scenarios is very important. Very important.
Absolutely. The funny, you should bring up the power one. I was once working with a data center who had skimped a little bit on things, and they had a fire. Mm. And the UPS that ran the floor caught on fire. And there was no bypass, so they couldn't even run the floor straight off the generator they just couldn't do it. And we had to scrub, or we struggled that day and actually found a nice transformer to put in place and just ran the thing on generator back power only for 3 weeks while new UPSs were brought in.
3 weeks. Oh my gosh, that was a hairy 3 weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, it was not fun. They had some large satellite providers there as well, so every time there was a little hiccup, they had a lot of calls.
Man, that would make for a bad month. A really bad month. I'm sure that did that happen in December?
No, actually, it was March 7th. it was a little over 12 years ago. I remember it was at 9:42.
Oh, my gosh. I was going to say, it sounds like that's the kind of thing that hits and just ruins your Christmas or your Thanksgiving or something. It's inevitably sometime. Well, I guess March is sort of an innocuous time, so I guess that's good.
But, you know, then at that point, it went back to the community I had working with me. Everybody came together to make it work. We got it. We, you know, saved that business. I mean, that should have been a, you know, business ending outage, but we turned it into about a 5-hour outage, and 3 weeks, you know, 3-4 weeks later, turned it into another small planned outage and got them fixed.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
It was an amazing thing to watch and very stressful, and I never want to do anything like that again.
Yeah. So two things I think I've carried away before over time is that every business has that moment. Something significant happens, and in that moment it's either we're going to survive this or we're going to completely go under, you know. And then hopefully most of them survive it and then they go on to be successful. But it seems like every company I've ever worked for, I've seen that moment hit. I'm not saying I caused that moment necessarily. That's not why I've seen it every time.
I have.
But it's, I don't know, sort of, it's interesting to think about that, you know, at some point everybody has those bad times. And keeping that in mind, I think everything's made by man, or rather everything that is made by man is going to fail at some point, right? It's just,
yep,
that's the nature of it. And when it fails, I think being as transparent as possible and being as quick to communicate, I think goes so far with people, you know, because the last thing you want to do is have a bunch of failures and not communicate that with people and then try and hide it. I think people really appreciate it when you say, hey, we screwed up. We're really sorry about it. This is what we're doing to fix it. I honestly feel so much more confident when a vendor does that with me, because I've got a couple that just, sorry, we checked the equipment, we didn't see anything. It's like, fool, I know something happened. You quit sending me light. You do this every month and a half. Can you please just tell me what it is? I'm not mad at you. I just want to, you know, it's like, I'm just disappointed. I'm not mad. But no, it's like everybody screws up. Just own up to it, right? And I super appreciate it when people are transparent about those sorts of things.
Yeah. Lots of stories along those lines, but we don't have time for that today.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So number six, the bonus one. I like this one. I've said I like all of yours, but I really do. I love this one too.
I said lab it or break it. The idea is you don't know how stuff works until you've put it into place and broken it several times and brought it back up from zero again. And when I'm doing new software for, you know, maybe a network monitoring system, I will sit there and install it 5 or 6 times. And that's what I love about, you know, the world of virtual machines now. It doesn't take quite as long to do it. You can checkpoint things and bop back and forth and make sure that you know exactly what the steps are so you can document it out. And so the next time somebody has to rebuild it from scratch, they can go look at it and say, oh, build a CentOS machine that's got a minimal piece and run these pieces, and that should at least get us close.
Yeah.
And, you know, that type of work, or, you know, throwing together 6 or 8 physical routers and, you know, making something that has multiple pathways across it and trying to figure out how, you know, the MPLS labels get built up, and, you know, just watch how it works and see what happens when you yank a cord out without doing it to your real physical network out there. Customers get upset with that. They don't quite get it. They, you know, we're doing it for them in the long run. Come on.
Yeah, but I especially like this one because most people, when they're doing lab work, they're just trying to make it work. And then they get it to work, and they're like, okay, we're done. But once you get it functioning, you've got to start breaking it. right? You've got to unplug this. What does it do? You know, even if all of your designs work as anticipated, what is it doing that, you know, so it's like, how do you know that it broke in a specific way? What are the indications? What are the markers? That way, if this happens in the field, I know what's going on and I'm not just sitting here just desperately trying to figure it out, you know? Give yourself a little leeway as far as that stuff goes. And moving into the data center, we had a customer last week that asked for, do you have any recommendations for coming in? And I said, stand up your network as soon as possible and break it in every way you can conceive. You know, unplug this device, unplug that device, unplug that, unplug a cable. And, you know, just do everything you can to try and break it. They were first time co-location. I mean, they had always done private co-location, and now they're moving into somebody else hosted facility, right? And so you can't just walk in there and touch it immediately. So break it in every way you can think of and see what happens.
Yeah. And the other piece is not only techs. You know, it's not only a word for text of saying, hey, you need to go break this and learn how to fix it. You also need to make sure the management understands that people need time to do that. People need time to be able to do the lab work, to see how things work, to see how things work under duress when, you know, there's things broken around there. Because if they don't know how to do it in a lab situation, they're certainly not going to know how to do it on your production network.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You're talking about it's not just for techs. This reminds me of how I had one of my techs come to me and say, hey, man, you know, I got this certification. I did this thing. You know, I think I'm ready. I'm ready for this raise. And I said to him, you know, the certification and the work you've been doing, right, it's great. But what I need is for you to be able to handle everything when it's not going good, right? This certification tells you how to build things and how to manage them when everything's right. The thing you lack right now is when everything goes wrong and you can't call me or anybody else, what are you going to do? You know, it's great that you can handle turning up new customers, but when everything goes to hell in a handbasket, that's what I need from you, you know? And it's funny, whenever you're interviewing people, how do you interview for that? You know, that they're going to keep their head when everything's burning down around you. It's such a harrowing experience, because I'm not saying I love it, but it's interesting to see new guys come in, hit their first major failure in something, and watch them fold like a lawn chair. You know, it's just because I remember doing it myself, you know, where you just start sweating and you just panic so much you can't even think straight. And it's like, how are you going to do basic troubleshooting when you can't even, you know, I mean, your hands kind of start shaking sometimes if it's bad enough, you know? And so how do you train people for that? Is it just,
well, lab it, break it doesn't mean just equipment. It's people too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, how do you, you know, hand somebody, you know, a pile of, you know, DNS, you know, here's something that's been running tiny DNS for God knows how long. And you look at it and you're like, you guys have 1,100 domains here. You guys have been, I don't think this thing's been touched since 2005, except people adding to it. Nobody's changed. Nobody's fixed anything.
And everybody's too afraid to touch it, right?
Well, they're afraid to touch it. And then by, you know, you're about five generations down and all of a sudden it's people that don't really understand the technology behind it. So you end up with these resolvers that and authoritative machines that are sitting there doing things that they don't need to. They have been for 15 years with a bunch of things that don't exist anymore. But since nobody's asking the machines, because, you know, it's been redirected elsewhere, you don't ever notice it. So how do you go fix that when someone says, how do, you know, hey, we need some help with DNS. Oh, no, you need a lot of help with DNS. You don't need just someone to come in and talk to you about this stuff. You need to go, you know, from the ground up again.
Yeah. That's tough.
It's interesting, you know, it's software, it's hardware, it's people. You know, put them in a lab, make them do some things, break it, see how they react.
Yeah.
And, you know, keep moving.
I mean, I love the idea of in a project factoring in lab time. You know, so hey, we've got this migration plan and you actually build in lab time into all of that, right? You understand that there's a soft portion of it where people have to learn it and get their mind around it and test and poke and prod. I think that gets forgotten by a lot of management, you know, the soft piece there.
Yeah, but sometimes they get shocked back into it.
Well, I feel like I can never have enough people, you know, because
no.
As soon as you get one guy proficient and you can hand some off to him, I mean, you're only renting employees, right? You don't own them. So at some point they're going to leave you. And if there's not another guy that's also training on that, then it's all back on you and your quality of life goes to pot again.
Well, you got to make sure that those folks understand that you're going to give them as much knowledge as they can handle. And you know that they may leave, but if you take care of them well, they may find you a successor. They may come back in, you know, a year or two and say, you know what, that was kind of fun, but I really liked it here.
Hmm.
Seen that stuff happen before. But you know, in the long run, everybody's got to manage their own career.
Yeah.
They got to work out, you know, what they're going to do and where they're going to go. And if you're in the midst of the things, it's always better to, you know, be able to hand off enough knowledge to say, hey, I need you to do this.
Yeah, for sure.
And have somebody that has enough knowledge say, okay, you may need to feed me the exact things to do, but I remember doing this before, so I get the gist. Let's go.
Yeah. And I like the idea of dumping as much information into people as you can. You know, like build them up as best you can. That way, you know, what is it, that Boy Scout thing, leave it better than when you got there. So, you know, I want them to be so awesome when they leave here that, you know, they take over the world. That's what I tell them.
And it makes you look good too, because everybody that sees the people coming from, you know, from where you are, they can say, hey, those folks over there did a good job. Let's go find, you know, let's go work with them.
Let's go poach some more of their people.
Exactly. I like it. I used to run a NOC for voice over IP company 10 years ago, and every single one of my guys got picked up by another company when the thing failed. One set of people that had been working with us just carefully went behind and just picked up every single one of my techs. It was kind of gratifying. But
yeah. Well, I mean, I was going to say, rather than them just, you know, sit on unemployment, I guess that's nice to see them get picked up. So that's a little tip of the hat towards you. Yeah, I mean, it's a feather in your cap, a badge of honor you could wear. I like that.
Yeah, they didn't want me. No.
Well, that's because you probably cost too much at that point.
No, I wasn't a very nice person that time.
Everybody's been there at some point. That's why we all grow, right? We're all capable of change, becoming better versions of ourselves. There you go. Very inspiring words, John. If somebody was out on the internet and they wanted to get a hold of you, if you wanted them to, because some people, you know, they aren't interested in that, how would you have them go about that?
Probably the best thing is just send an email at john@osmond.net, john@osmond.net.
All right. Sounds easy peasy. Well, John, I sure appreciate it, man.
Right.
And if people want to catch John, shoot him an email, or any of you cats that want to join the patron, jump in the Slack, and John's Johnny on the spot, as it were, in there. Really good insight. You're very technical about all of your responses. I'm so nonchalant and off the cuff. You actually take time to think about your things, and I applaud you for that.
That goes back to the vocabulary piece. I've learned that if I'm not precise in that type of thing, I misspeak and people take it the wrong way, and then it gets derailed instead of giving real information.
Well, or that, or sometimes if I'm just off the cuff, then they'll ask another question and I'll answer that off the cuff, and then another. If I was just precise at the beginning, it would have saved me more time in the end.
Now you're off the fairway and just sitting there going, well, I didn't want to be out in the rough. I want to be out there playing the game.
All right. So anybody listening, if you've got tips and you want to record a session, hit me up, greg@gregsoul.com, or contact us at thebrotherswisp.com. happy to get you on here as well. And one more time, thank you so much, John, and thank you guys for listening.
We talk Greg, thanks about for all you do.
Methodology, so sit back and start learning. Lighting up the tower so people can start searching. Shooting up the web in neighborhoods, net surfing. We got horrible jokes, we're loud and annoying, but we're informative facts, we're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, cause fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.